UK Wine Show, show number 37, Parry Estate. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 37 for the 9th of February 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and we're going to be talking with Michael House from Parry Estate. Parry Estate is a new winery in a new region of Southern Fleury, just down the road from McLaren Vale in South Australia. We're going to be talking to Michael about the difference between McLaren Vale wine and the virtually unknown region of Southern Fleury, as well as I get to try some cracking wines. As many regular listeners know, the show is sponsored by 3050, the wine tasting company, and I'm going to be running some wine appreciation courses in London coming up. There are going to be four tastings on Tuesdays in March near St. Paul's. You can go to all four tastings for £80, or you can roll in any individual tasting for £25 per person. Tickets are selling fairly steadily, and we've got about five slots left for each of the 5 days. But you can get all the information you need by going to our website, www.3050.co.uk, and clicking on the left-hand side under What's New. Next up, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. A new study by French scientists has found that Concord grape juice may be just as protective against heart disease as red wine. The study by researchers at University Louis Pasteur de Strasbourg and published in Cardiovascular Research found that the grape juice stimulated the same chemical reactions in arteries that are activated by red wine. This shows that the components of the grape, rather than the alcohol, produce the beneficial effect for the heart. However, just as with red wine, not all grape juice has a positive effect. The key is that it must be high in polyphenols like Concord purple grape juice. Professor Roger Corder, whose book The Wine Diet promotes the drinking of red wine every day for a healthy life, told us that the observations were consistent with previous experimental studies of purple grape juice. In fact, Professor Corder cites purple grape juice as one of the alternatives to red wine. He says that what is needed now is a clinical trial to compare how similar the effects are of red wine and purple grape juice. Then we would know more about the daily amounts to recommend. Concord grape juice is available in the UK as Welch's purple grape juice. Those of you who love French wine will be interested to hear that Bordeaux has launched a consumer-friendly website in a bid to make its wines more approachable. It comes at a time when the region's winemakers have just rejected proposed reforms to the AOC system, which had hoped to make the wide category of Bordeaux wines easier to understand. The website bordeaux.com explains all about the classifications and appellations, as well as giving details on the grape varieties used and how to read the labels. It also features an extensive glossary of wine terms along with relevant facts and figures. And for anyone wanting to visit a chateau but not knowing where to start, there's a Discover Bordeaux section with maps of 5 tours on the wine route. The website has been set up by the region's governing body, the CIVB. And finally, if you spend £5 on a bottle of New World wine, you'll be in right royal company. It's been disclosed that the Queen does just that for serving to guests at palace receptions. According to the Daily Telegraph, which was privileged to tour the Buckingham Palace wine cellars, if non-vintage champagne is off the menu on these occasions, then the Queen mainly offers wines from the New World, some of which cost only £5. South African Chardonnays and New Zealand's Oyster Bay Sauvignon Blanc are particularly popular. When it comes to lunches, however, the Old World is favoured, with French wines being the order of the day. Old World wines are served at dinner too, and are followed by dessert wine or vintage champagne. The contents of the Queen's cellars are reputedly worth £2 million, says the Telegraph, and in 2005 to 2006 she spent £400,000 restocking them. The Queen buys much of her wine en primeur, often 20 years before it is due to be drunk. That way the wine can be ordered more economically in order to annually entertain some 20,000 guests at these type of events. And finally, 30 years ago, on the 11th of Feb 1977, it was reported that Odbins was offering a salary of around £3,000 a year for a post taking responsibility for the marketing and buying function of the company's product range. That's it for this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Next up, we're going to have the interview with Michael House from Parry Estate in Southern Fleury, South Australia.
Hi, I'm here with Michael House from Parry Estate. How are you, Michael?
Very well, thanks, Chris.
We're here in Fleurieu.
Fleurieu Peninsula, South Australia, that's right.
You guys have got two estates, haven't you?
Chris, we have two vineyard estates, 82 acres here in the southern Fleurieu, and a further 14 acres in McLaren Vale.
What we wanted to do when we're going through this is maybe talk a wee bit about the difference between the two sites. Before we get into that, how did you guys first start out and how long have you been running for?
Well, Parry Estate was established in 1998 by Alice, Peter and John Phillips, so it's a family-owned company. Originally, they planted the vineyard here in the southern Fleurieu from what was a cattle property, and that was established in the early years, and they started selling fruit to local producers such as Darrenburg, a well-known producer in the region. And then in 2001, they went to the next level and produced their own branded wine. Steadily have sort of started to develop a portfolio of wines from that time. And then probably a major development was 2004 with the purchase of the original Ingleby Road property in McLaren Vale.
Who owned that originally?
That was, well, originally owned by Jim Ingleby, who's a well-known industry identity. He then sold it to Mildara Wines in the early 80s, I believe. Mildara Wines hence then became part of the Foster's Group. Foster's Group sold it to us 2 years ago. We thought it was a great opportunity to access some established vines, you know, 60, 70 years old, in a more established area, and that would complement our efforts in developing a very new site further south in the southern Fleurieu.
What's the climatic differences between, say, southern Fleurieu and McLaren Vale? Because they're not that far away. There's only about 20 minutes drive between the two areas, isn't there?
That's right, yeah. It's quite remarkable. There is a big difference between the two sites. Firstly, altitude. As you head from McLaren Vale up Wallunga Hill, it's about a 300-metre altitude increase.
That would mean it's generally cooler because of the altitude.
Very much so. The other aspect, I think, is the fact that the southern Fleurieu is quite close to the Southern Ocean, so you get a moderating effect from the proximity to the ocean, higher rainfall. So a combination of those factors makes the southern Fleurieu site substantially cooler, up to 5 degrees Celsius cooler than McLaren Vale throughout the growing season.
Do you find it warmer at night here because of the closeness to the sea, or is the altitude sort of even it out?
The altitude evens it out. It does get quite cool here at night. We can get some frosts in the spring, but we tend to manage that reasonably well. Whereas McLaren Vale is, you know, what you would call a Mediterranean climate, warm Mediterranean maritime style climate. I think another important aspect, the soil type, McLaren Vale being more of a clay-based soil, southern Fleurieu being more of an ironstone rock-based soil. So that all has an impact. And then obviously the last one would be the age of the vines. You know, McLaren Vale is very much an older site, whereas the southern Fleurieu vineyard is still developing.
You've got some vines in McLaren Vale because they've been pre-planted. How old are they?
Well, the Cabernet Sauvignon is around 45 to 50 years old. The Shiraz would be similar. And the Grenache, there's actually some old bush vine Grenache still left there, and that's potentially 60 to 70 years old, some of that material. So quite unique. You do see a lot of that old style vines in McLaren Vale, but I think certainly we've got one of the you know, very good quality sites in the area.
What are the main factors that you see as vines get older?
Certainly, reduced yields is probably a big factor. You see quite a substantial reduction in the production of the vine.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it depends what type of wine you're trying to produce. If you're trying to produce a premium product at a higher price point, I think lower yields can be a good thing.
Yeah, more flavour concentrated. And the roots are obviously deeper as well into the ground, so they're getting more nutrients coming through.
That's right. So you don't need to, in terms of watering or irrigation, you don't need to water old vines as much as you would younger vines, which their root system is not as well established. So you need to give them some water on a more regular basis. So, there's a number of things, I think. The concentration of flavour, as you've mentioned, intensity would be the biggest issues, yeah.
Okay. We've got a couple of your wines here to have a bit of a sample and just see if we can tell the difference between them. I think we'll start off with your two Cabernets. You've got a Cabernet from McLaren Vale and a Cabernet Vale here from Fleury. Now, just on the nose, if we just give them a bit of a smell.
Yep.
Do you want to tell us a wee bit about the difference?
Yep, sure. Well, I think to me, these two wines really do display the distinct difference in the two vineyard sites. The McLaren Vale, the 2005 McLaren Vale Cabernet, which we're looking at here, certainly has a very deep colour to it. That's the first thing I pick up. It has a concentration of what I call plummy and jammier type fruit characters.
That's coming mainly from the heat, from being a bit warmer in McLaren.
Yeah, warmer, very much so. A combination of some older vines as well, that concentration. But yes, soil type, climate, all of those things combined. So, you know, this wine's up around 15% alcohol. Yeah. So it's a very much a fuller bodied style.
Didn't taste 15%. I noticed a bit of sweetness on it, more than the alcohol when we tasted it earlier. What sugar level is it at?
Well, the Beaumet was picked up around 14.8 Beaumet, so we picked it at quite a ripe sugar level and fermented almost all the way to dryness.
Yeah, but it still tastes quite sweet. That must be the alcohol coming through, is it?
Yeah, it's the alcohol. But I think it carries its alcohol well. It's still got...
It's not too hot.
That's right. I think the key with alcohol is balance and fruit balance and fruit weight. And what we were looking for here was a wine that had enough fruit intensity to carry its high alcohol.
Yeah.
And I think it does that. We didn't lash it with too much oak. We only gave it 12 months on a combination of French and American. Whereas the Southern Fleurio Cabernet is quite different. What I would call more of an elegant style Cabernet Sauvignon, a little bit more pronounced acid structure to it, softer, more herbaceous type flavours and tannin structure. You get a little bit more of that capsicum type character in there. It's 13.5% alcohol.
Bit lighter as well, you know, it doesn't feel as heavy.
Very much so, you know, possibly more European in some respects. So those two wines there certainly display the difference in the two sites, and, you know, the remarkable thing is they're only, you know, 30 kilometres apart.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Also, you've got two labels. You've got a white label, which is your estate-grown label, and then you have another one called Pancaro, which is your more premium label. But you've got it from your Parry estate as your Cabernet Sauvignon, even though it's younger vines and it's got that more herbaceous style and less alcohol. What made you decide that rather than doing it the other way around, where some people might go for it?
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Obviously, the Pancara label reflects the Aboriginal connection to the brand. And Pancara is designed to be the best wines from either vineyard site every vintage. When we were looking at the two Cabernets, obviously we had to make a decision as to which one would go into which range, the white label being the estate range and the Pancara being the premium. I think we went with the Pancara from the Southern Fleurio mainly because we felt we believe Cabernet has a lot of potential at this site, the Southern Fleurio, long term, and we felt that we wanted to start to try and establish that from an early stage. I think that was one reason. I think it also has more what I call classic varietal Cabernet character, whereas the McLaren Vale Cabernet, a terrific drink that really over-delivers, but it possibly doesn't have as much what you'd call classic varietal characteristics of Cabernet Sauvignon than perhaps the Southern Fleurio wine does. So that was our decision. If we find that next vintage there's a difference, and then we may change that.
The other wine we wanted to look at, or the next set of wines we wanted to look at, was a bit of Shiraz. You've got three Shirazes, a Pancaro Shiraz, this time from the McLaren Vale.
That's right.
Versus an 03 Shiraz from Parry Estate here in Fleury, and then a Shiraz Viognier as well. We'll start off with the 03 Shiraz from here. Let's have a bit of a smell and a taste. Mm,
sure. Look, I think starting with the 2003 Shiraz from the Southern Fleurio Vineyard, this is, you know, classically more of an earthier style of Shiraz. It's got certainly some acid structure to it, some dusty type aromas and flavours. It's more elegant in a lot of ways than what you would expect from some of the warmer regions of Australia, such as the Barossa Valley, McLaren Vale, Clare Valley, etc. We've given it 2-3-year-old French oak for, you know, no more than 12 months. So again, the fruit profile from the Southern Fleurio tends to be more lower in Beaumet.
When you talk Beaumet, you mean sugar level? Just
yes, that's right.
It's a measure of sugar level.
That's right, yep, that's right. So it can't handle too much aggressive oak. And being combined with the fact that it's 3 years old, it is starting to show a little bit of developed character. So that's quite an interesting drink at the moment. Whereas the McLaren Vale, That is the first release from that vineyard, from the Ingleby Road vineyard. It's a 2005, so it's very young, obviously. They've only just released this wine now. You certainly see a more intense colour, certainly a grippier tannin structure to the wine, a higher alcohol, you know, at 14.5%.
Getting a bit of that classic pepperiness as well on the nose coming through.
Yep, some strong pepper character. It's still possibly a little closed on the nose, and I think that will take some time to open up.
Just on what closed means, a lot of people talk about wines being closed. You're really talking about sometimes when you first bottle a wine, the wine doesn't really have a big aroma to it, does it? And then it just sort of opens up and starts developing characteristics. Mm. How long would you expect this wine to be closed for?
Well, look, it was bottled in March, so we're now here in August. Look, I think certainly coming into next year, it will really start to open up. Most reds, I believe, need a good minimum 6 months before they start to express themselves properly. So the palate is starting to really show through now, but I think the nose just needs a little bit more time to catch up.
The last one we've got here is a Shiraz Viognier, and it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it, for a Shiraz Viognier? Mm. Do you want to tell us what happened with this one?
Well, this was the first time we decided to produce this traditional Rhone-style blend.
Yeah, it's quite a trendy variety mix, isn't it, now these days, Shiraz and Viognier?
Yeah, it is. Australia is very well known for its Shiraz in general, but there are a lot of producers in Australia looking for different angles of Shiraz, and I think that the Rhone technique of using some Viognier is really starting to emerge in Australia now. So the 2004 vintage was the first time we went down this path. It was made retrospectively because the decision was made after the 2004 Shiraz was actually sitting in barrel. So what we actually did is we harvested the 2005 Viognier and we put 5% of it into the existing 04 Shiraz and we re-fermented it. Now, that's perfectly legal as long as it didn't go over the 15% limit. You can use the 5% from a different vintage and you don't have to declare it, so it's own laws.
It's a blend of 04 and 05, but because most of it's come from the 04, you can call it an 04 wine.
That's right.
And the last one we've got is the 60-year-old Grenache 2005 McLaren Vale.
That's right. Again, first release from the Ingleby Road Vineyard, 2005 Grenache, 60 to 70-year-old bush vines. They're hand-harvested every year. They're not trellised.
What does that do, having it on a bush as opposed... Because normally when you grow your vines up along a trellising, and then it makes it easier. But these are almost like goblets, aren't they? Like Southern Rhone goblets.
That's right. Look, in terms of logistically, it makes them very difficult to manage, both pruning, harvesting, and general maintenance. But that's the way they were planted all those years ago. And I guess rather than tearing them out, which some of them have been torn out over the years, they become, over a period of time, they become a priceless asset. So really what you're looking for is the quality of the juice and the fruit over and above any other consideration. So this, you know, Grenache, I think, from certainly McLaren Vale in particular, is a great asset and does have a very distinct flavour. I think there is a growing interest in Grenache as a variety, or Ganache as it is known in Spain, and it displays a lovely savouriness, certainly a full-bodied weight to it, but it carries that. You know, this is up around 14.5-15% alcohol, but that savoury fruit flavour, I think, carries that alcohol very well. So, yeah, I think this has been a really interesting wine. It's the first time we've made it from this vineyard, and we're very excited about Grenache. We think it's got a great future.
It's quite soft and it's got a nice bit of weight on the palate. Again, it's a wee bit closed on the nose, so maybe in a couple of years' time or a year's time that'll open up.
Very much so. I think that'll certainly go the distance. There's no reason why that couldn't sell off for 6 to 8 years.
Thanks for running us through the wines, Mike. One of the things that I'm finding out about is a wee bit about the old Australian oversupply, both in the Chardonnay and the Cabernet. From your point of view, is it true? What's the issues there?
Well, look, Chris, as you know, there's an oversupply globally, not just in Australia. In some varieties more than others, but at the moment, in Australia at least, you know, we've experienced some oversupply in a number of varieties. I think at the moment there has been a fair bit of focus on Cabernet and Chardonnay as being two varieties that where demand is not in balance with supply. Much of that fruit has been planted in the late 90s in response, I suppose, to the rapid development of the industry and the export growth of the industry. And we probably overestimated that. We felt that was going to grow at the same pace we've found that the sales and market demand growth has probably slowed and plateaued a little bit as we've gone into the next decade in the 2000s. And then those plantings have then come on stream now in that mid part of this decade. And we're now seeing an oversupply, particularly in the premium cooler climate regions. So that's going to take some time to sort itself out. I think another factor is that the love affair with Australian Shiraz has probably had a negative impact on Australian Cabernet as a result. And whilst we've done very well from Shiraz, that probably hasn't helped our sales of Cabernet. So that will even itself out over a period of time, and we're now seeing some outstanding Cabernet coming out of Australia. It's just a matter of how we promote it and getting it into people's mouths, and I think if we can do that, then I think we can correct it. Yeah.
One of the things I noticed was when we were doing a lot of tasting, people had gone off oaky Chardonnays out of Australia, but the unoaked Chardonnays, you know, which is just nice, clean fruit flavours, and that, they're quite popular still.
Yep.
But I think people have just got a bit wood shy.
Yes.
And maybe they're not willing to have a go at unoaked Chardonnays.
Yes. Yeah.
You think finding people are starting to produce more unoaked Chardonnays as well?
Very much. I think that's another reason. I think there has been a slight move away from heavier oaked styles of Chardonnay, and that's probably contributed to the demand for Chardonnay falling across the board. But what we're now seeing in response to that is a development of new styles of Chardonnay. So unwooded Chardonnay, definitely, particularly at more commercial price points, easy drinking, fruit-driven, aromatic styles of Chardonnay.
Seen quite a bit of Viognier Chardonnay as well.
Yes, some Rhone blends again. We actually produce a Viognier Chardonnay blend, which we co-ferment. You're starting to see more experimentation with Chardonnay, more diversity with Chardonnay, lower alcohol, less use of oak. So you're getting wines that are retaining freshness, which is critical, I think, with Chardonnay. Again, I think Australia's evolving. You know, we're evolving as a nation, and you're now seeing a really diverse range of Chardonnays coming onto the marketplace. So hopefully that will bring a lot of the consumers back to start drinking Chardonnay again, and hence correct the oversupply problem.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Michael, and cheers.
Thank you very much, Chris. Good to be here.
Hope you enjoyed that interview. Next week, we're going to be talking with Jamie Good again, this time on his book, The Wine Science. It's a book that came out last year, and I found it a cracking book. It's a bit technical in places. It's been an invaluable resource for me over the last 6 months, and it's definitely a book if you're into more the technical side of wine. It definitely helped me understand a couple of issues that I didn't quite get my head around at the time. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griff de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jartel and Silence by Etoile Noire.